Lions are 6-1 for the first time since 1956. No letdown spot against the Titans. They rolled up 50-plus points. The absurd stats, the reaction to all of it, and a question about that 14-3 bus that John's been driving. But we've got Michigan State calls to get to. You guys have been waiting. Let's knock out a few of them. Tony and Brighton, you're on 97.1.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning.
So my take on the end of the game, usually what happens, you're winning, you're going to take a knee. You tell the sideline judge, hey, we're taking a knee. You know what the sideline judge goes and does? Tells the head referee, who then tells the opposing team, they're taking a knee. It's all love after that. That dude lines up in his two-point stance like he's in a track stance. He's going to fire off. He's going to be a prick about it. I'm not sure if I should said that. Sorry. And then that's how it kind of starts. Now, Colston should not have headbutted him. Colston took a lot harder hits than that throughout the game. Ain't that big of a deal. Colston shouldn't have headbutted him.
I agree.
Yeah, that's fine. I have no issue saying it's a prickly thing. Michigan State was being prickly. I won't dispute that. I mean, Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was just going to say, John, you played at the Division I level. Do they still do what I just said, right? They will let the opposing team know, hey, they're taking a knee.
Yeah, I mean, if they can't see the...
That's how it was done at lower levels.
Right, yeah, if they can't see the obvious, I mean, you could tell by the formation.
Yes, dead giveaway.
Yes, yeah. the officials do come in and say, hey, they're taking the knee. But, the obvious is what it is. Yeah, everybody knows, especially at that level, they're not running a play.
Right. The game's...
But, Tony, you're correct.
On its final seconds. Yeah, listen, it's a prickly thing to do, to fire off and engage physically. They did. Then they disengaged, and that's when it should have ended. And Michigan should have... Talk all the trash you want. You won the game, talk all the trash you want. You win, you keep the trophy, you own the rivalry, your first-year coach beat their first-year coach. First time a Michigan coach in his first season has beaten the Spartans since Benny Oosterbaan.
Since Benny Oosterbaan, yeah.
48. Yeah, I mean, like, own it at that point. Just go celebrate your win and be done with it. Instead, we get, I want to overdo it, but like this unnecessary skirmish.
Yeah.
Let's get to Rob in Clinton Township. Rob, you're on 97.1.
Hey, fellas, great show. This little brother thing is just way blown out of proportion. The little brother is also talked about in other venues. I coach high school ball on the east side. We took over a program, and we're trying to rebuild and get things right. Our crosstown rival put a number on us on Friday night, and they chant little brother also. But as far as Michigan State goes, they are. I mean, they're the little brother to Michigan. They want to be Michigan. They have to win the next 50 years, I think, or 45 years in a row to tie the rivalry up, with the exception, of a couple of years mixed in. They really haven't done anything in football. Michigan's owned them. I don't know. How far back
we want to go? Because 20 years, it's 10-10. I mean, I guess we can go back to like joining the Big Ten, if you want. We can go back to Michigan playing high schools. I mean, for the most part, this rivalry's been competitive since the turn of the...
Well, I think since what are we calling him, PB? Or Pauly B?
Players have called him that, by the way. I didn't make that up. Pauly B.
As far as the headbutt thing, if you're competitive and at that level, somebody's getting their hands up your grill, what you going to do? It's a physical game. Strap it on and play it like it's a physical game.
Right, but game's over at that point.
Well,
right?
it technically wasn't over. There was still time on the clock, and I was curious as to how the referee is going to handle it, because they could have done the whole offsetting penalties and make you go through the process again.
I'm stupid. I mean, you're right. Yeah. They could have. I mean, it's
sure.
Not,
yeah,
it's,
it could have been a hands to the face, and then it could have been a personal foul
unnecessary roughness,
all of those things, and then we go through the motions of offsetting penalties. We're not going to actually penalize anyone. If it happens again, we're going to eject you from the game. But there's 10 seconds left on the clock.
Listen, I love our callers, but that's talking points out of the Michigan Mafia. That's like Cliff Notes version of the handbook you get to join the Michigan Mafia. When we refer to, the head-to-head win-loss record is, and so really, you're going to take it that literal. So Michigan would have to lose 40 straight, and they would still be a little brother until they lost the 41st. I'm just making up numbers here in terms of the discrepancy.
Right, what he's describing is that's
when Michigan
ridiculous.
Fan goes back pre-war.
So
I believe
there's a 10-game advantage for Michigan since they instituted Paulie B, right, or that's what we're calling him. I kind of feel stupid
saying
call
him
that.
Paul Bunyan if you don't want to say Paulie B.
Yeah, but you said Paulie B.
Well, I'm just hip and cool, so that's why
That's my definition for you. That is spot on.
I don't want to know your actual definition for me. We can leave that
off
air.
Where's the dump button?
Yeah, no kidding.
Hold on.
You should actually make the Paulie B trophy and then see which one looks better.
I'm sure Paul Bunyan is just fine as he is.
But it's... It's a 10-game advantage. If that's what we're using to... I don't even think that's appropriate at this time. It's, okay, what happened last year? Or what happened the year before? What happened when these coaches went head-to-head?
Yes.
Like, so now we've started, in my opinion, because the rivalry goes a lot more, but there's a reset when you have a new coach. There's a reset in this rivalry because both head coaches, Sherrone Moore and Jonathan Smith, this was their first game. All right, so Sherrone is up 1-0. Now let's see what happens when they go back to East Lansing next year.
But without having the exact numbers, I really believe since Saban got hired that this has been a pretty equal rivalry.
Yes.
That there's been ebbs and flows, much like Michigan-Ohio State kind of was for a while until it got out of control a little bit.
Well, I gave you 10 and 10 in the last 20. You'd have to go back another,
Well, after the Saban hire, I think we started off 3-0.
Right, because John, do you have any familiarity with that time period? Yeah, you guys did very well at that point. But then you even get the back and forth, the Plaxico game, the Braylon game. Like, even early 2000s, there was some good games.
Spartan Bob, there's been some great games.
There's always been a competitive fire with this rivalry in the modern era. And, I don't know, Loveland going with the old standby, the old reset that even the man who coined it doesn't like. I don't know. That's not the biggest issue coming out of the game, but I think it struck a chord, touched a nerve.
The tenor of this rivalry moving forward will be set by Sherrone Moore and Jonathan Smith.
And I thought both of them were adults about all of the skirmish stuff after.
Yep.
And I think it sets up a nice rivalry here where if I'm Jonathan Smith, I got baptized into it now. And I got the game at my place next year. And I can't get out coach. I got to lean on and trust my quarterback next time around. Finish the job next time. They were the team that outplayed Michigan for large stretches. They just made critical mistakes and Michigan played a clean brand. How about that? A well-coached, clean brand of football this season and got the win. And they should get the credit. John and Gross Point, you wrap up this conversation, then we can talk Lions. You're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So basically, I just wanted to say, I mean, I feel like the discussion is pretty easy if you just like kind of break it down. I mean, I'm not sure the state player's name, forgive me, but he fired off a little overly aggressive, I guess you could say, at that last play. As everybody knows, I mean, he's kneeling. There's no reason to fire off that hard unless I understand, like, it's a rivalry game. Maybe he's a senior. Maybe this is his last time to hit a Michigan player and he was going to use it. But Loveland, you know, gives him a little bit of a headbutt, but, you know, it could have ended right there. You know, when the state player goes and puts his hands on him and then, you know, kind of, you know, ragdolls him a little bit. I mean, that's when it gets beyond to that aggressive nature that the state games have had lately that is unnecessary. And I feel like if, you know, they left it at that initial fire off and Loveland's headbutt, then we wouldn't even be talking about anything. And so it's that third step that really, you know, draws it into something that was unnecessary. And I don't understand why there's even a debate of, like, who's to blame. You know, it's pretty evident in my mind.
Well, at some point, you can be the bigger man and walk away. And whether it's the hands to the face and in coming off on a victory formation, which it's an extreme rare occasion that happens, you don't have to headbutt. Yeah. And I understand.
Well, Jack, once you get headbutt, you're probably going to get physical with him, right?
Well, yeah. So, but he also when Colston Loveland headbutts him, he also doesn't have to grab his head. Like it gets escalated every step of the way.
Sure.
And there's enough blame 100%. To go around.
But John, can I ask you one question? No, you're not too far taken away from the game. If that were to have happened to you, you know, you're in victory formation, a rivalry game. Somebody fires off that hard at you unnecessarily. What would you say your immediate reaction would have been? Would you have gotten in his face and given a quote unquote headbutt and said, "Hey, that was unnecessary"? Because that's what I feel like he did. Was like, "What are you doing?"
Well, you know? There certainly would have been some harsh words.
I feel like I know you well enough, John, now at this point after listening to you. That there probably would have been enough harsh words.
Yeah.
But I don't think
you
would
have. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, you. John. Thanks, John. I don't think you would have headbutted him or physically engaged with him. You would have probably given him a look and said some nasty stuff and moved on, right?
Oh, yeah, there'd been some pushing and shoving, sure.
Yeah.
But it's it's unfortunate that a game that did not have those moments during the game for 3.5 hours, that's the way it ended. It's disappointing.
Ticket Texter says, Costa, you keep talking about this little brother comment as though it's about the competitiveness in the rivalry. It's not. It's about the prestige difference in the program. Michigan, much more elevated than MSU. See, but I think what it comes from is this idea that Michigan is like so much more superior. And the way we determine that oftentimes is, you know, we invite a bunch of fans out. We put the scoreboard lights up and we play the game. And those games have been competitive. You know, I mean, Michigan is coming off 3 straight Big Ten titles. Of course, they're the top dog right now. They've won the game the last 3 years.
Colson Loveland himself has outscored Michigan State.
Right. He hasn't lost in this game. So on some level, I understand. Hey, talk your talk. And by the way, I do think part of this game is Michigan State did not know that that Michigan was
allowed. Scored 4 touchdowns in 2 years. How many has Michigan State scored?
Two.
Okay.
But I think Michigan State was unaware that they were allowed to pass the way they were defending some of that. They're like, wait, what? They're throwing the ball. Oh, no, we let them get behind us, and that's on them. They got to be better.
John, are you wearing Michigan underneath that Redskins blazer, the Commander's blazer?
Am I? Yes, I am.
So this guy's in glory mode. I mean, now listen to the Loveland stat.
No, I'm in relief mode.
Yeah.
Relieved the game's over. I'm relieved we won, and now we can move on.
So you're wearing a Lions hat, a Michigan hoodie, and a Commander/Washington former football team, whatever.
3-0.
Yeah.
3-0 this weekend.
By the way, do we call it a Commander's blazer? You played for the Washington Redskins.
No, it's
Redskins.
Got the R. Yep. The and I told everybody on Twitch.
You better change that to a Sikh or I'm calling.
Yeah, the woke police. Yeah.
John's canceled today.
Give him a shout.
Coming up at 8:18. No, we'll talk Lions football next, 97.1.
Hey, I've been talking about injury attorney David Feminino and his team for a while now. And we've got the 2 Grand Slam that they sponsor on Tuesdays, but just listen to some of the results that David and his team have been able to get for injured clients. These are individual clients, $3.5 million for one, $5 million for another, $11.5 million for an individual client. You need an attorney that will fight relentlessly the same way for you. You can call and speak to David right now by calling 855-65-CRASH. You can always go to the website, getdavidgetpaid.com. That number again, 855-65-CRASH, or on the web at getdavidgetpaid.com.
Classless Dan Campbell running up the score.
Mm. Can you imagine the Christie household?
They got to be livid today. Mm-hmm. Lions continue to win, and this case win big. And this was a spot, hey, you never know. It's the NFL. Is it a letdown? Anything but. Detroit was unrelenting. They scored 7 touchdowns in the game. 52 points on only 61 passing yards, which kind of feels like a math problem. How does that? Here's how you solve for X. 250 yards in returns, 4 turnovers, a bunch of short fields, and the Lions continued to drive the point home. John, 52 points. It's this team avoiding a letdown. It's them showing that they are a special brand of football. They're clowning people every week. It's David Montgomery throwing a touchdown pass. I just really want to make sure they don't waste this. I think more now than ever, go at a pass rusher. F them picks. Do not squander what we're staring at right now, which is a great football team.
So I'm curious as to what F them picks will mean, or what's even available, because we've heard, you know, the Raiders and ownership double down on Max Crosby's not going anywhere. And so, okay, you shift to Myles Garrett. Doesn't mean you don't make the call. Hey, you know, it's a new week. Give him a call. Give Cleveland a call. Myles Garrett. And then you work your way down the list. Za'Darius Smith. All right, and I don't think even after the win against Baltimore that Cleveland is in we can recover our season now that our highly compensated quarterback is hurt.
No, but like Trey Hendrickson, Bengals lost.
Yeah.
Are you offering them 2 twos? I mean, I think you should be aggressive right now.
You definitely have to be aggressive, and you may be in a position that you have to overpay.
Yep.
Because teams know what you need. They know how desperate you are. There's other teams in the market for edge defenders. We saw it last year with Chicago and Montez Sweat and San Francisco with Chase Young. So it's, yeah, you are, I don't want to say in desperation mode, but you have a clear need at the edge. And if you have to overplay a little bit, then you overpay a little bit. And Trey Hendrickson, before the season, had asked for a trade. Now, whatever they had to do to mend the fences, they did. But he's only got a year left on his contract. And is he going to be a part of a resurgence next year for Cincinnati? I would anticipate going into the final year of his contract that he would demand even more, that I want a new contract. And if you don't see a version of the Cincinnati Bengals with Trey Hendrickson, now how can they get the most out of the player that they have, the value that they have in Trey Hendrickson? Well, it's going to be trading him to the Detroit Lions, and it, you know, instead of a second-round pick, they might ask for 2 second-round picks.
It reinforced it to me. Like, this team doesn't let up, that they are that good and great even, and I don't want great to be squandered because they stand pat or are unwilling to give up certain draft picks. Listen, if the player's out there and you've got your full arsenal of draft picks, make it happen. Trade deadline a week from tomorrow. John, the game itself. Early, gave up some plays in the passing game. Mason Rudolph, of all people. I think it just reinforces what needs to happen in the next 8 days. The game itself, what'd you take out of it?
That this team could beat you in a number of different ways. We saw early on when the offense was sputtering a little bit, defense stepped up and played well. And then all of a sudden, in week three against Seattle, the defense, gas pedal down. Offense found everything that they've thought that they were going to be able to. Not Seattle, it was Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, Jared Goff has been as close to perfect as you're going to be as a quarterback. Continues to be that way, even though it was only 15 passes, 85 yards yesterday. It was all short fields. And what was the one thing that they didn't do well against Tampa Bay?
Finish in the red zone.
They were perfect in the red zone, 5 for 5 in this one. Mm-hmm. And short field. So you're not going to have a lot of numbers offensively, but the only number offensively that really matters is the one on the scoreboard.
Yep.
So they were able to do that. But it's been offense, it's been defense, and special teams has been very consistent since Dave Phipp and Dan Campbell have been in town. Now all of a sudden, this is a game where you're looking at, you know, Khalif Raymond. You're looking at Khalil Dorsey as guys that are just out there kicking ass. And this was 100% a special teams win.
Yeah, throw Bates the 51-yarder plus all the return yardage. And yeah, you made the case. They've won games with their defense. They've won games with their offense. This game, more than anything else, goes to special teams.
And for Jake Bates, too. I did not come up with this saying. It was one, and it's not original to my time at Michigan or in the NFL. Consistency is the truest measure of performance. He has, through 8 weeks, been very consistent. 7 games, but 8 weeks in the NFL. Very consistent at kicking field goals.
11 of 11 on field goals.
And very consistent. One missed extra point. But 7 for 7 yesterday. I mean, I am developing much more trust, and it doesn't matter the trust I have in him, but when he takes the field, that it's going to be a made field goal.
248-539-9797. We have open lines as the Lions continue to take care of business. 6-1 for the first time since 1956. Like, I think we know special stuff's happening, but when you say that, and again, in this league, it's real easy. You get up emotionally against Dallas. Actually, before that, Monday night against Seattle. Then 2 weeks to salivate, and you have that big emotion and that big win against Dallas. What about a letdown? Can't let down. You got Minnesota on the road the next week. Eventually, you'd think there'd be a moment where this team, human nature, it's Tennessee, it's one win. That's not how they handled business. That's not how this team handles their business. And I think it says a lot about the championship mentality that we have here in Detroit. And I get a ticket texter who says, Jim, you sound like a clown. They win 52-14 and it reinforces they need to add a player. Yes, because it's about winning the Super Bowl. I don't want them to leave any stone unturned. They didn't need a pass rusher to beat Tennessee. And they might not need one to win a Super Bowl, but I don't want to leave it to chance. I want to do everything they can to capitalize on the football team that we've been waiting our entire life to watch. Like, John, I caught myself at one point because the fourth quarter was meaningless. The second half was largely irrelevant. And you can kind of get a little bored, and I stop myself because I don't want to be bored. I've waited my entire life to have a team that kicks this much ass. I'm not going to be bored. I'm going to find a way to still enjoy every single second of this, and I hope the team handles the trade deadline the same way, that they give them every chance to be the best version of themselves.
This team is so good that they're surviving without a pass rush right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you watch these last two games and not see the deficiency with the loss of Davenport and Hutchinson. And when they play an elite quarterback, and that might not be until the Super Bowl, they're going to need one. It's, you know, Rudolph had moments yesterday, but then the team folded. He started turning the ball over, but they're not getting a rush, guys. And it's going to rear its ugly head eventually. I believe you add even a semi-significant piece of this pass rush and they'll be fine. But you've got to add somebody, and we don't know what's going on with Pascal yet. He said it's non-related to his former cancer stuff, but then he never got into the specifics of what it was. I mean, you need bodies at this point.
So the Pascal stuff, just so people understand, because anytime you use the C word, people know he previously had, you know, the cancer diagnosis, people get scared. He did assure people that this is not related to cancer, but it's something that came up during one of his annual screenings.
Yeah, and he said he had to get it taken care of. So he kind of just left it open, and he was clear that it's not like, you know, that it's come back or something like that.
Right, because everybody would be concerned, of course. But yeah, they didn't have him yesterday. And if he's going to miss any amount of time, it only adds to the need.
Yeah, and yesterday they didn't need it because they're such a good team and they played such a bad team.
Yeah.
We're not trying to poo-poo what they did
it just, it really shows you the type of team they are, that you're going to play bad teams in the NFL, right? Like the Ravens played a bad Browns team. They lost outright. The idea here is you learn a lot about yourself in big games primarily, but you also learn about yourself when you play bad teams too. This wasn't like they eked it out or had to, you know, rear back into the well to find a way. They did what you're supposed to do, and they did it in loud, obvious fashion.
Yeah, and it wasn't, hey, coming out of the second half, the third quarter, which has been an issue for this team. In the past, it was, you know, left lane pedal down the entire time.
We'll get some phone calls in the mix. We got Heather's news. We got overreactions from the weekend. And at 9:02, TJ Lang struts into the studio. It's 97.1.
Hey, looking for ways to level up your fitness? Well, the YMCA is always welcoming new members with no contract and no joiner fees. I'm loving the YMCA family membership with access to indoor pools, Les Mills group fitness, hundreds of machines, all with free child watch while you work out and for less than $3 a day. And today you can go and try the Y for free. Visit any of the 7 Metro Detroit locations and get a free guest pass. Learn more at ymcadetroit.org and find what moves you today.
Love it. That's Dan Campbell after the win. 52 points for the Lions. I love how much fun people are having on the ticket text. Can we really trust a QB that only completes 12 passes for 85 yards? Might need to find an upgrade at the deadline. No, it's great. Like Jared Goff and this offense were handed short field after short field after short field, and they were just having a blast.
And you're forced to go to your running backs to actually throw touchdown passes.
And what does it say?
I mean, my goodness.
Jared, come on. Let's get to the phones. Mike and Livonia, you're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning, fellas. So, it's Cookies, to be honest with you, I'm starting to kind of lean towards your way, man, especially this morning. You know, when you look at that game and you look at this team, this is as complete a team as there is in the NFL, and obviously there's not a complete team out there. But you look at it, when we came into this season, we were thinking, okay, we have an issue with wide receiver where we maybe are lacking depth, and we need maybe potentially another, rusher. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this point, I mean, we lost Aiden. Tim Patrick has been a godsend, and Allen Robinson has provided some depth. So that's been solved, and you look at it, like, all three aspects of the football team, and we're looking at special teams, offense, and defense. They're playing great. They're complete. The only thing we're missing right at this point is the pass rush. And so, to me, you know, I'm one of those people who, totally agrees with Brad Holmes that you cherish every pick, that you re-sign your homegrown talent. But at the same time, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is such a complete team. We're just missing literally maybe two pieces, maybe one major piece if it's a pass rusher. And I really want Max Crosby. I just feel like he fits everything about this
team. Mike, did you see what the Raiders owner said over the weekend?
I know, and I was so disheartened because Mark Davis came out and said we're not trading him.
Well, no, Mike, what he said was we're not trading him before or after the deadline, which to me, Mike, means they're trading him on the deadline. Let's make it happen. Let's go.
Oh,
no, I know. The dream is probably dead, Mike. But I appreciate the phone call, and I think, John, we're all kind of on the same page here.
Here's what I wanted to say, though. And if it's okay with me, I'm not willing to give up 3 first-round picks, but you, at this point, yes, go ahead and get it done. Thanks, Cookies.
Yeah, listen, it's got to be depending on the player. Like Max Crosby, you could justify. Yeah. If he's not available, I don't know that there's a guy worth giving 2 firsts up for.
Miles?
Yes, if he's available.
Right.
Other than that, you're probably talking, you've got your first this year that I'd barter with. You want some seconds? I mean, we can get a deal done here.
You know, guys, I always like to do these things when opinion becomes fact. It's a fact that Brad Holmes has to make a move here, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's as every bit fact as Scott Harris had to trade Eduardo Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah.
Is it strike one if he doesn't? And for me, it is. I won't. I'll say it just point blank. It would be irresponsible and negligent if Brad Holmes didn't add at least something in the medium area.
Well, let me stick with the cross sport analogy. Brad Holmes has done a great job.
Yes.
He is in a 3-0 count, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's worked this thing. He's found a great roster. Swing away here. I trust Brad Holmes to swing in a 3-0 count.
3-0 count with the bases loaded.
Yeah, swing. Do some damage, baby. Let's go.
I mean, it's hanging over the strike zone.
Yeah.
All you got to do is swing.
And you might miss, right? It's not like it's promised that if they trade for a pass rusher, they're guaranteed
exactly.
a Super Bowl, but you swing.
We can look at the move and you can have opinions on the move, but it's a fact that he has to make a move at this point.
So no matter what it costs?
Yeah.
All right, so if Cincinnati says, we're only taking 2 first for Trey Hendrickson, and that's the trade that happens. Are you going to sit here and say I fully support it, or did he overpay?
2 firsts is a phone call other places first before I do that.
Is it coming with an extension? Is he extending him as part of the trade? Because if he is, I could see it. I think it's an overpay, but I could understand it.
My point is, we all want Brad Holmes to make a move, and I think as we understand, and having talked to Dan and listened to Dan, that Brad Holmes understands that he has to make a move, but it takes 2 to make that move. If you call up Cincinnati and they say, well, we only want 2 firsts for Trey Hendrickson, I don't know that I do that trade.
Well, right.
Or
well,
if it's Za'Darius Smith and they said, well, you know what? We want 2 seconds for Za'Darius Smith. It's not worth it. And so you've got to have somebody on the other side that is willing to deal.
Right. We talked before the show, though. The deal I proposed to you was what I would say is over. You're giving too much, but the need is so strong, and it was actually giving this year's 2 to Cincinnati and next year's 1, and I would do it for Hendrickson. You have such an opportunity right now. He's the third best guy on all our list, right? The Crosby,
yes.
Dream,
yes.
Then Garrett, and then Hendrickson.
Hendrickson has 42.5 sacks over the last 3.5 seasons. I mean, he's in some of these seasons, he had 17.5 a year ago, and he's not a one-dimensional player. He's a true defensive end who you could put in there against the run, every down guy.
He's gone to Arrowhead and won in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's been to a Super Bowl. He's taken down Patrick Mahomes.
Well, this is where, you know, the sources say, or the leaks is where information does help frame what ultimately happens. Because if they don't get a Trey Hendrickson or a Za'Darius Smith or a Hardy from Tennessee, like, why not? And is it that they didn't call or didn't offer, or, you know, which team balked at the price that was tried to be agreed upon?
Where you might have to overspend to do. And
I understand that.
And I think this team is begging with the way they're playing for them to do whatever it takes.
I feel this strongly about it. If you face Mahomes, Jackson, or Allen in the Super Bowl, that it might cost you.
I don't disagree with that at all. I'm willing to sit and wait because I do think something's going to happen. But if something doesn't, that's where you wonder, is it the arrogance of Brad Holmes and in his belief of Dan Campbell or in what's going on? Or is it the fact that you weren't able to find a deal? You weren't able to make a deal happen with somebody that we thought was going to sell.
TJ Lang, 902, overreactions at 850. But first, Heather with the news.
Okay, you guys, let's talk about what happened on Sunday. So on Sunday, the Miami Heat unveiled this brand new 8-foot bronze statue of Dwayne Wade, all right? And it was all to honor him for his impact on the team, on the city. It was, you know, something great, right? It was a really exciting day, I would imagine. But as soon as the statue was revealed, it was obvious that the final result looked absolutely nothing like him. Have you guys, I'm sure you've seen
yes.
this. Yes. Right?
Are we sure that's Dwayne Wade? Because it doesn't look like him.
What? Who is it? Oh, the memes are excellent. People are comparing the statue to all sorts of different things. It was so bad that even Wade himself didn't really recognize himself. Who is that guy? Everyone wanted to know, who is that guy? Even though the statue was kind of a complete failure, he did still express his gratitude, right? He was very excited and humbled right. by the experience. So, but man, it's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, go look at it. Holy cow. Hey, if you're in the process of looking for a new job, you might want to listen to this. There is one answer to a very common interview question that won't get you the job, at least according to one CEO. So this CEO says that when you're asked during your interview when you can start, your answer should never be less than 2 weeks. Obviously, if you're not in a current job, that might be a little different. But if you are like switching jobs and you say, well, I can start tomorrow, that's a red flag according to the CEO, because they're saying, hey, you don't show a commitment to your previous job that you're just going to leave them hanging, not give them at least the 2 weeks notice. That's kind of a red flag
that
as to
sense.
How you would treat us, right? Like he said, if somebody were to interview and they're like, oh, I can start tomorrow, or someone says, you know what, I need at least 6 weeks to wrap up what I'm doing with my previous job, make sure my employer has enough time to fill my space. That is somebody, they'd rather hire the person that they need to wait longer for than hire the person that's just going to drop their other job and
sure.
and switch.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Also, here's another tip. If you are, you know, filling out applications and you're creating resumes and cover letters, you might not want to use AI to do that for you. There's another businesswoman who is kind of sharing just a complete failure when it comes to an application. Clearly, somebody used AI to generate a letter because they didn't proofread it or delete certain things. This is like a quote from the cover letter. It says, here is a more polished and articulate version of your cover letter. So like they left that exact saying in there, didn't delete things they had looked up. So beware, if you are going to use AI, make sure you're reading over everything before you submit it. Finally, you guys, wedding season is almost over, right? Like once winter comes, there's hardly any weddings, not as many anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if you attended some weddings, I bet you probably heard Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody out on the dance floor. That is, according to a new study, the most popular wedding song.
Is it?
It is.
Huh.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody likes it.
And I... Right. I get that. I'm sure it was played at my wedding. Number two, Dancing Queen.
Okay.
Makes
sure,
sense,
ABBA.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. By Usher. Mr. Brightside, number four. And then September by Earth, Wind & Fire came in at number five.
Hmm. Interesting.
No surprises to me. Heather, any of those surprise you?
I don't know. I don't think Mr. Brightside is playing at my wedding.
Yeah.
Excuse younger. It's a millennial thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I get it. And I get the, I can see it happening. I don't believe it was.
It's for people under 40, Heather.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry. It was on a tee. I'm sorry. Heather with the news. We got TJ Lang at 9:02. It's 97.1.
I was not 40 when I got married.
I know,
right?
Heather. Okay, I know. Okay. I know. Sorry. It's 97.1.
Hey, we still have Monday Night Football tonight, so why not cap off week 8 with a chance to win on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers get $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins on tonight's game. And check out some of these parlays for the Monday night matchup between the Giants and the Steelers. How about Russell Wilson? Now he's the starter. Over 1.5 passing touchdowns. Malik Nabers over receiving yards. Najee Harris anytime touchdown. That's one of many that you could pick from, or you could build your own. Just visit FanDuel.com/Jansen to make every moment more this NFL season. That's FanDuel.com/Jansen. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or over and present in Michigan. First online real money wager. Only $5 first deposit is required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.